Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Rampage preview. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to look ahead to tonight's episode of AEW Rampage. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review AEW Rampage, but also AEW Dynamite, Raw, SmackDown, NXT Dubai, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete. A quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Sidgwick, and this is Rampage, baby. It's a weird thing to preview this, not specifically this week, but this period right now, because this, you know, start time, whilst great for us viewers here in the UK, decimates the viewership even more so than basketball or hockey or whatever it is. And arguably, that's getting a little bit reflected. I still think they've put on, you know, a hell of a one-hour show here. But it's an interesting dynamic with the pay-per-view coming up in, what, the end of the month?
Yeah.
In terms of priorities, like Dynamite is always stacked. And this has got, you know, a title match. It's got the Owen Hart tournament. All stuff like that. But it's a strange period, isn't it, for AEW right now?
Yeah, it is. That you're talking around and being very polite about the fact that this card is absolutely incredibly phoned in.
Yes.
It's incredibly phoned in. There's absolutely nothing screaming out as must-see. There's no, like, huge match. There's no huge star in a huge match. It looks like a nice, serviceable hour of television, one that it's virtually impossible unless you're absolutely in the weeds, one of these Arden Ultra, everything this company does is amazing, guys. If I miss this, and I won't, I'm going to watch it as part of my professional capacity. Like, it's very, very inessential. It very much screams to me, we are going to get absolutely annihilated in a bloodbath, potential record low in the ratings.
Because it was like 200,000 something, but it was like 3 p.m. in the afternoon in the U.S., not to make excuses for them. But
yeah, they know they're going to get killed. They know they are going to get absolutely murdered, and this is very much a card that suggests that they are throwing in the towel for this particular week.
Should they have, like, I don't know what I was going to say, should they have given up on it? But in terms of, I suppose they can't not put anything on. But
theoretically, there's a title match and there's a tournament match. Yes. There are stakes. There's at least one match that I've not checked the spoilers. I don't do spoiler checks to enhance my viewing experience of the show. So there's one match that is pretty unpredictable, and I think the ceiling for it is reasonably high.
Yes.
And we'll get to it imminently. But look, it's one of those things where I don't really care. I don't like the idea necessarily of AEW just doing content for content's sake and not giving you enough of a valid reason to watch the show. But by the same token, they are overcompensating on these Dynamite shows, especially this week and next, which look ridiculous. This week's Dynamite was an all-timer. I don't even know what half the show is. It's so intriguing. It's either, like, next week's Dynamite is either incredibly intriguing with two debutants, a Kyle O'Reilly and Rey Fénix dream match. Like, there's loads to it. And Rampage is, it feels like they know that Rampage is going to die a week, so let's get all the the numbers potentially, or as many viewers as possible, and all the praise and all the buzz and all the acclaim on Wednesday. So it's very unevenly weighted.
Yeah. Between must be a strange thing to go and see as well, because like you sit through, you have Dark and Dark Elevation. So yeah. I don't know. Which one do they film
it's
in?
Dark Elevation. Thank you. Then Dynamite, then Rampage.
So they do all that. It's like they do the Dynamite. You splash some cold water on your face after, like you say, this week, next week. This road to Double or Nothing is going to be bonkers, basically. And then, like, if you went, you had that, this, which was, again, damning with faint praise. I'm sure we'll talk about it on Monday. Another brilliant 7 out of 10 that absolutely flew by. And then you got sent home with Hulk choking out CM Punk in a dark segment, not AW Dark. So you probably left this and went, what a fantastic series of shows. And yet, this does just feel like it's just... there you go. If you want to watch it, it's there. But we also know some people won't be home. They'll be literally still at work.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, avid fans, like you say, will catch up on it. But it's certainly not essential viewing.
Not at all. And just to build on the point you've made about the fact that this is obviously getting taped and the last thing that these fans watch, like the problem, an additional problem to... This NBA preemption deal is that, right, okay, we'll load up Dynamite so that our fan base can be absolutely buzzing with what's happened this week in Rampage is, you know, an inessential but hopefully pretty damn good accompaniment to your AEW experience of the week. The issue with making this Dynamite so awesome and so stacked is that the inherent problem with Rampage, which it more often than not plays out to an exhausted crowd that tries to be polite but the physical body can only do so much, is that the issue of an exhausted crowd is going to be even more pronounced.
Yeah.
They've got more exciting stuff to be exhausted by and minimal, pretty good stuff that, right, okay, this looks great, I'll try and get up for that. And I'm expecting this to be dead. I'm kind of expecting this to be sort of flooded with cheap, like, video game arena effects. I'm not looking forward to the show, if I'm being honest, but hopefully it's nice when it happens.
Yeah, I sense that on Monday, when we review this, we'll be pleasantly surprised by this.
That's because I've got literally zero expectations.
Yes, but we have an exciting match that we're going to start talking about in the Owen Hart tournament. Riho, one of your favourites, of course.
Yes.
Against Ruby Soho. Intrigued by this one.
I'm intrigued by this one. I've not read a single spoiler. It's kind of a head-heart deal where my heart says Riho, but my head says Ruby Soho, purely because like Ruby Soho appears more on television. She's always sort of linked to Hayter and Britt Baker. And the idea is that Ruby Soho came in as a big deal. And she's kind of, if you want to be generous about it, this might be headcanon at this point. But I think the story they are trying to tell with Ruby Soho long term, it's kind of an underdog WWE Daniel Bryan, Sami Zayn deal where she keeps losing big matches, loses more big matches, gets out of the mix, and one day she can... The idea is that she shows enough in these matches to retain fan support so that when she actually wins the big one, it'll resonate as this big, hard-earned triumph that the fans were with her all the way. That's only ever really evident for me on paper. I don't think the fans are with her. I haven't seen a really... I was really impressed by the tag team match on Dynamite, on Rampage rather, last week. But that was the first time in ages where I've really felt like Ruby Soho was a valuable asset to the company. Mm. And she was like, she had an audience on side. Nonetheless, given her profile and how much they've booked her last year more so than this, I feel like she might go over here. I don't think that's a good idea in terms of the quality of the tournament going forward, or in fact, who they should be building. Riho, and bear in mind she had a split schedule, so she wasn't there every week, and there was obviously much discourse about that, as there is everything else. She wasn't an ever-present in the first chapter of AEW Dynamite's history, where she was the AEW Women's Champion. But she was like an early standout draw that I think Dave Meltzer expressed shock and surprise by, but she really had something that sort of the online reception didn't really sort of reflect her popularity in demos. And obviously that's tapered off because she's barely around and, you know, she's not the champion, she's not as profiled. But she's definitely someone that fans have always connected with, and she was a really shockingly successful demo draw. I think she's the better worker. I think Ruby Soho's got more great work in her than AEW fans haven't yet seen. But for me, Riho's got the ability to get it done in the context of AEW. I'd like to see her advance. I think that the ceiling for this match quality-wise is really high. What I like about it is that it's an all babyface encounter, which they don't tend to do on Dynamite in general, because as I've said before a million times, it's episodic to a fault. We don't really get to see sort of like friendly exhibitions, if you like, but I expect this to start on that note, and then deeper into the match, they'll realize how much of a competition it is, and then it'll get a bit more fierce, it'll get a little bit more physical. It'll structurally, I think it'll be a little bit, not identical, well, identical in structure, but the moves will obviously be different to Riho versus Yuka Sakazaki last week, where it gets a little bit more intense, and they realize we're in a fight and there's stakes at play. My only concern is that Ruby Soho is going over, which, frankly, I don't want to see because I subjectively prefer Riho.
Yeah.
But if, in fact, Ruby Soho goes over, there are devices that bookers and agents use to get the loser over in defeat, and Ruby Soho has got the most cringeworthy, shocked kick-out face in all of creation, worse than anything I've ever seen on NXT, and think of the ground that covers. And if the idea is, right, okay, let's give Riho something, let's give her a... let's have a kick out of what was the old kick that Ruby Soho? She's kind of abandoned it now.
Not the riot kick,
something like that. It's the terrible kick that she now does. Sister Abigail slash Blade Runner is a finish because she's realised the kick she used to do.
The one out of the corner.
Yeah, the one in the corner just looked rubbish. So my worry is that she can now use that as a signature, and Riho can kick out of it to give her something, to give her credibility for the next thing she does, which unfortunately might be in 4 months, AEW, and that Ruby Soho is going to do an absolutely cringeworthy shock out, kick out face again, because she's really, really good, but she needs to get the WWE out of her system.
I agree, yeah, and I think you're right in terms of this is probably a coin flip. It's Riho versus Ruby Soho, and the winner will face, spoiler alert, Red Velvet or Chris Statlander, who's replaced the injured Hikaru Shida. We wish her well, of course, in her recovery. But I think you and I would probably both agree that we think that the winner of the...
Is Shida in Japan? I don't know. I don't know. It's all a bit weird, this.
Yeah, but I think the winner of this tournament's coming from the other side of the bracket. It's Tony Storm, Britt Baker, or who's Britt Baker facing?
The Joker, baby. I'm the Joker, baby.
So I think it almost... Not that it doesn't matter, but like... You can make an argument for either Velvet or Statlander.
Statlander.
I just love the baddies.
I like the baddies a great deal, and I think Red Velvet has got such a great presence about her, such a great face, where it worked as a baby face for fire, and it works as a heel for like proper aggression and attitude. But Statlander's the far better worker. I want far better workers working better workers in this AEW women's division, as I've said for quite some time at this point. And Statlander has previous with Riho and Ruby Soho.
Oh, yeah.
It was the Statlander-Ruby Soho match where we saw the shock kick-out face, which kind of ruined it because they were working really hard, dropping each other on their heads, like a proper good scrap. But the only takeaway was that face. And Statlander and Riho had a match, if you recall, right? You know how like the narrative is, and you can obviously get the correct narrative by going on Amazon and buying Becoming All Elite, The Rise of AEW, where I capture all of this. My favorite chapter to write was the early 2022 Revolution 2020 pre-pandemic, because it was just my favorite to this day period in AEW. But it wasn't quite every single show was a 10 out of 10, because Statlander and Riho had a match that everyone was buzzing about, because it was like two complementary opponents. You don't want mirror matches. You want opponents with a contrast that can complement one another. Power versus speed and agility. It was going to be awesome. And then Luther debuted.
Oh, for...
And I think it was the January 8th or the January 15th, but potentially the January the 8th, 2020 Dynamite, because they'd just done that home run homecoming where I was like, right, okay, we fixed it somehow after December 18. That was amazing. Here we go. Women's wrestling's great now. And then it's, oh, Luther and the Nightmare Collectives are still a thing. And yeah. So I want to see that match revisited, because they've got so much more to play with than they were allowed to do then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We mentioned Red Velvet and the baddies there and Jade Cargill. They are being given a platform to say something tonight. Hard to see where you go next with Jake. I mean, they're doing wonderful stuff, whatever they do. I think it's a fantastic move. It's seemingly trending towards eventually a Jade Cargill babyface turn. But in terms of... yeah, this streak continuing. I don't know who's next or what's next for Cargill and the baddies.
Yeah, it's, again, like, not to just completely bury the women's division, but like, they don't half earn it most of the time. Is that because Thunder Rosa and Serena Deeb is happening, and because a lot of the other female talent is occupied in the Owen Hart tournament, it's enough that they do concurrent things with women in this yes. promotion, let alone a third. So the TBS
title... we doubled the output.
Yeah, so like tripling. Ah, come on, not doing that. So it just feels like the TBS title is on the back burner.
So and I don't yet, arguably, one of the most prestigious titles that they've got right now. Yeah, AEW world title, obviously.
Yeah,
women's world title has got a great lineage, but is often forgotten about until it's not again. And we'll talk about the TNT Championship in a bit.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, so I don't know what's next for Jade Cargill. They built heavily the number 30 thing and the Marina Shafir match, which I thought was a triumph. Like, they totally overachieved. So I don't know what's next, and that's because if you go through the process of elimination, they've built so few stars through, again, an apathetic philosophy that if you take away Deeb and Thunder Rosa, and you take away all of the entrants in the tournament because they're either going to advance or they've just been beaten in the first round, so they're hardly a credible threat, you're left with Neon.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to say.
Maybe, to their credit, maybe it was going to be Statlander, because Statlander versus Cargill would be an interesting version of a mirror match, like one of the few ones. And maybe, because they've been quietly building her, which quietly is the emphasized word, and maybe they're going to do Statlander Cargill because Statlander was curious by her absence from this tournament. And maybe the fact that they've had to put someone credible against Velvet and there are so few options. They're reaping what they are sowing, and as a result, it's hard to deduce what Cargill does next.
I mentioned it there. TNT Championship match, Scorpio Sky versus Frankie Kazarian. Another intriguing dynamic, because obviously being put up against... Sammy Guevara has sort of turned Scorpio Sky babyface, although, as you pointed out, I mean, everyone just has a go at Tay Conti now, so who's the real babyface?
Yeah.
And then he, of course, now faces former SCU partner Frankie Kazarian for the TNT Championship. Sammy Guevara has been like, oh, watch your back, he's going to stab you in it, et cetera, et cetera. How do you see this one playing out?
Oh, Guevara's clearly going to play some kind of part because this is how they book, and again, episodic to a fault in the... all too often show their hands. I'm expecting there's no need to protect Kazarian. If anything, Scorpio Sky
should have protected him when he was the Elite Hunter.
Yes, absolutely. Scorpio Sky, he had that wonderful 2 minutes of a very uneven, artless ladder match where it felt like, is it because they hate Guevara so much or because they actually like Scorpio Sky?
Anyone will take anyone.
I'd like to think a bit of it was Scorpio Sky getting the crowd on side, because I was impressed by him in that match and his body language, etc. But, like, yeah, he badly just needs a few clean wins. Not only will it help solidify him as a babyface, it'll act as a hint because it's an insolvable misogynistic puzzle, basically, in terms of who's the heel and who's the babyface. Well, they're both calling Tay Conti a slut. One of them is doing it for heat, and one of them is doing it because, hey, one of the lads, she's a right whore, isn't she? She's a right whore, isn't she? Oh, and I hate this so much because the idea is, and I've said it a million times, women can shag whoever they want as long as they consent to it. And the stud versus slut dichotomy has pissed me off for years and years and years. And I don't need Sammy Guevara to interfere. I don't need a Sammy Guevara versus Frankie Kazarian match. And that's not a knock on Kazarian. They simply haven't booked him. At various points in his AEW and particularly his BTE runs, I've thought Kazarian's been great. But you can't just do now with them. You can't book them to lose to Doc Gallows, one year later, TNT title contender. It's just, yes. This match, I worry, is going to be solid. And you know, I love great wrestling. I'm not an idiot. There's Omega Ricardo 4. There's literally everything else. There's some stuff underneath that. We talk about the tier of greatness.
Yeah.
And then you go to good, and I'm like, I'm too old for good.
Yes.
Too much precious time for good. And then you get to solid, which is my least favorite thing, because I've got time for bad. I've got time for terrible. I've got time for infuriating. I've got no time in my life as a 36-year-old parent of two for solid. And I think this has got solid, well worked. You know, if you really pay attention to this match and some of the...
We were laughing about this in the office yesterday, you and I, about how often when we're going towards a big pay-per-view, they put people over to then have someone go over them to then establish them as, you know, we're talking about Cole and Bloody 10 and all that.
10 killing, 10 yeah. being the original. 10 walked so Wardlow could run.
Yes.
By killing all the security guards. It's like, right, okay, well, I'm not... 10's main event revolution, is he? What's going on?
So I think you're right. I think Sammy Guevara interferes. I think regardless, Scorpio Sky retains no matter what happens. Scorpio Sky retains. Sammy Guevara interferes. Sammy Guevara gets the win over Frankie Kazarian to presumably set up... Are they doing the mixed tag at Double or Nothing?
I hope not.
Oh.
They should do it on a special Dynamite beforehand because I don't want to see it.
Okay.
For my exclusive benefit...
Yeah,
don't do it on the paper, but it feels like it's going to be on the paper.
We'll get to this six-man in a second because I know you're excited to talk about that. And let's just very rapidly run past Sean Spears versus Bear Boulder. What could this be related to?
I think this might be, Wilborn, like Tony Khan's way. I'm being very cynical, but, you know, it's just, it's fine. Because the thing that it's building to is going to be great.
Yes.
It just, Tony Khan's got this kind of habit where it's vaguely insulting, where it's not as insulting as an exposition recap video of literally the thing I saw 2 minutes ago in WWE. But he's got this slight habit where it's like, Sean Spears can beat someone big? Does that spell trouble for Wardlow? It's like, no, it doesn't at all. No, it doesn't. The real genius of that Booker maneuver is putting MJF in the guise of a special referee, because there's no chance that I can think of Sean Spears beating Wardlow on his own terms.
No.
Hence why, because they know this, so they have put MJF in the black and white stripes. That's why any of this is happening, right? So why then go to the trouble of wasting time by having Sean Spears beat someone bigger? So it's like, oh, maybe Wardlow doesn't have a chance after all. And it's like,
even if there was just a referee calling it down the middle.
Literally, you know it and I know it.
Yeah.
That's why MJF's the ref. So this match is literally pointless filler. But Sean Spears is such banter that him putting, like, he's got this great eating smug grin on his face. That if he puts, and when he puts, Boulder or Bronson?
Bear Boulder.
Boulder away, like, he's got such a little good face. I'll never not appreciate Sean Spears being on my TV.
Yes. It's one of those things where, you know, there's an argument to be made that Wardlow comes down and interferes, but it's not going to happen. Look how many other things are happening on this card. They want a 5-minute bish bash bosh. Like you say, Sean Spears can beat a big guy. Maybe there's some involvement from Smart Mark Sterling that allows, please, Sean Spears in his white gear with his white chair to twat Bear Boulder over the head with it, basically. But yeah, it's a straightforward victory. But in better news, I've just realised, do you have this? You must have this. Not a match, but a segment that you like deliberately don't watch for, say, 6 months to a year, so you can go back and watch it again and enjoy it all again. I'm thinking Mark Henry's retirement speech. I'm thinking, it's a perfect example because this is mine, and I've just realised that I've had that sufficient amount of time. Cody Rhodes' 10 lashes ahead of Wardlow's next week. You must have some of those.
Yeah, I have this thing where I try... If I love something, I kind of watch it like 3 or 4 times. And then because I want to, I can remember every beat in my head and I want to be able to forget everything and miss certain details. Again, I'm going to go my Twin Peaks
bollocks.
Twin Peaks bollocks. Like, I watched it, The Return, twice as it aired. One, because I was reviewing it for What Culture. Twice because I wanted to watch it with my wife, who really likes Twin Peaks as well, but I didn't expect her to get up at 1 a.m. because I was never not going to watch it live at US time. And then I watched it again immediately afterwards because I loved it so much. And then probably just again. And then I remember watching it because my second child was born like pretty much a year afterwards, and it had come out on Blu-ray. And I thought, right, okay, they just sleep and do nothing, and I'm on paternity leave. Right, draw the curtains, because like Lynch works with a lot of black, and you can't see any reflections on the screen. There's a lot of nuance within the
you
black.
You can see your tired eyes staring so like, back at you.
Yeah, and it's April as well. The sun's very annoying in April. So I refuse to touch grass. I waited 4 years, 2018 to 2022.
Wow, yeah, you've been talking about
and
this in the
office. So vivid and so unforgettable and so great that I've forgotten literally two scenes. I don't mind because I love it, but I just wish I could forget it.
Yeah, one of the few occasions you wish you were me because I've never watched Twin Peaks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, let's talk about this six man then. Yeah, Sean Spears is going to squash Bear Boulder, basically. This six man, Death Triangle versus The Butcher, The Blade, and Mark Quinn.
This should be great because you've got a really nice, interesting contrast of characters. But I don't want it to be too great, and that's for a specific book and purpose. Uh-huh. I think Butcher, Blade, and the Quinn are slightly above the Boulders and Fuego, who Death Triangle killed in 2 minutes in that awesome squash. But I'd quite like it to be a 2 minute squash in a way for the exact purpose of mirroring these two acts, not in terms of their styles, but in terms of how like dominant they are and how quickly they can dispatch. Just a bit of parity so that the trios match, which I expect to happen at Double or Nothing, has as much unpredictable intrigue as possible.
Titles for that? Is that what they're going to bring the titles out, maybe?
I need a tournament, man. I need a G1 style round robin. Because imagine you've got Kenny Omega's return, and it's like G1 style, every single show apart from Elevation, every TV show, you get like a dream match. Because it's a round robin style tournament. So in my fantasy booking, you have Blackpool Combat Club versus the Elite on Wednesday in the block. And you have Blackpool Combat Club versus Death Triangle on the Rampage. So that Brian Danielson works Kenny Omega and Phoenix in the space of 48 hours, but not in a singles match where you think, oh, they're burning through too much good stuff.
Yeah.
So not for the titles, but this is going to happen. But given that they like The Butcher a lot and they like Private Party, who've kind of dipped off the radar about these things happening in AEW because they did some really good work earlier this year, particularly Cassidy. But I don't expect it to go too long. Just some really cool stuff potentially here, like Quinn and Rey Fénix doing stuff should be pretty tits. The Butcher and Pac having like a crisp body control versus burly bruiser heavyweight, like miserable bastard battle, gruff bastard battle. There's loads of stuff they can play with here, but at the same time, I don't want them to play with it too much.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm going to be really the sort of anti-AEW fan here because I'll be like, let's not do too much with Rey Fénix because he's got a big match next week.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm like, look, if you're going to do some mad bumps, let Pac take that. Let Pac take that. Because Rey, I really want you to be 100% Rey Fénix. Was he Kyle O'Reilly he's facing?
Kyle O'Reilly,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, my word.
Should be glorious.
So looking forward to that. But yeah, a win for Death Triangle.
Greatly.
Greatly. Let us know your thoughts ahead of AEW Rampage tonight on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M. Sidgwick.
Becoming All Elite, The Rise of AEW is his brilliant book. It's available on Amazon right now. You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. The SmackDown preview is already out with some interesting booking decisions for Butch on there. That's all I'll say. And we'll be back later on today with Wrestle Culture with a hashtag Bloody Good Quiz, of course, and myself and Sid will be back on Monday to review AEW Rampage. But for now, this has been the AEW Rampage preview. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.